This is the Generations Broadcast. Kevin Swanson with you. Bill Jack also with me. And this is it. This is it, my friends. We've arrived at the watershed moment, the ultimate height of destructive force on the part of the zeitgeist in the breakdown of Western civilization. We have been nuked. It's not as if we're going to be nuked. We have been nuked. And I'm not just talking about drag queens in Erie, Colorado, first grade classrooms. This is it, my friends. Lightyear hits the theaters this weekend. You say, what's Lightyear? It's Toy Story 5 in the largest, most influential franchise in children's film in the history of children's film. This, I believe, is the final straw that breaks the back of human civilization. This is what happens. And this morning I warned an audience of 200 parents at the Christian Home Educators Conference out here in Denver. And yesterday I warned an audience of 1,000 parents in another online seminar that it was happening, and it's happening now, because this is the week at which Disney releases its incendiary film, and billions of children will, in some way, shape, or form, be led down the pathway to hell by this Pied Piper. And the only thing I said to these parents that can possibly protect your children is you, by God's grace. I don't think there's anything else that can stand in the way of this multi-billion-dollar, $70 billion behemoth that seems to be able to control the hearts and souls and minds of 2.4 billion kids around the world and set the direction of the way in which kids think and the way which cultures will develop, at least sexually speaking. There's never been a time in the history of the world at which there has been such a universal force on the part of the zeitgeist that can set the direction of a culture and form the opinions and positions of political states, as well as the present zeitgeist. And that, my friends, is the power of Disney. And again, the only thing that can stand in the way, I told these parents, is you. If you make the choice that your children will not be taken down the primrose path to hell by these incredibly powerful Pied Pipers, then your children will be protected by the grace of God. Parents can still stand in the way. Parents can still say no. I'm not saying it's easy to do this, but parents can direct the nurture and the admonition of their children. They can bring up their children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord Jesus Christ. They can still make the choice. There is one thing that can stand in the way of this multi-billion dollar force that is pressing down hard upon 2.5 billion children around the world, and that is a few parents who still care. And that's the message I sent home to the audiences that I get a chance to speak to, Bill. If there was a point at which parents should rise up, it is now. And I also mentioned that, thank God they're doing it in Florida. Thank God they did it in Virginia. In fact, the 2021 gubernatorial election was pretty much set by parents who were rather offended by the Democratic candidate who said, you know, parents don't have any say in what happens in the public schools. Apparently, 54% of parents in the state of Virginia said, I think we do. So parents are rising up. Parents are saying, we're done. It's time for parents to make these decisions, make these choices for their own children, and not turn them over lock, stock, and barrel to the zeitgeist and to the force of Disney.
In the Old Testament, the god Molech is called a child devourer, and that's exactly what we're doing today. We are sacrificing our children to Molech by allowing these things to penetrate their minds and their hearts. And that's the power of movies, as we've talked about many times, is that they contain all of the elements that appeal to one's emotions, to one's heart. And once you give your heart to a film, you must defend it. And so that's what Disney is doing, and doing it very well. They know how to seduce through the power of film. And what we're doing is allowing the old Molech idols and altars to be rebuilt in our culture.
It is an ultimate irony that only a few Muslim nations are actually concerned about their children. Malaysia, United Arab Emirates, a few other countries have banned the film that is Lightyear for its homosexual content. Hollywood media actually did report that Pixar chose to include the homosexual scene in the animated children's film, quote, in an internal backlash to Disney's handling of Florida's parental rights and sexual education legislation. So that was it. Children became the kicking toy in this argument between the Florida governor and Disney. And so I guess just out of pure, you know, revenge, Disney and Pixar said, okay, well, here we go then. We will indoctrinate every kid, because who cares what happens in the public schools? Florida was trying to limit the kind of sexual education going on in the public schools, but Disney understands their power. They understand they are far more powerful than public schools.
Yeah.
What happens on the silver screen? Far more influential in a child's upbringing than what happens in these boring public schools. So Disney understands that it is far more powerful than the Florida state government, and the governor of Florida is trying to somehow control the homosexual indoctrination going on in his public schools. Well, I visited the website pluggedin.com to try to give me a little bit of update on what's going on with this thing. Just remember, this thing's opening up in 4,200 theaters. So this is one of the largest openings for a children's film in the history of children's film. Never in the history of the world has there been such an all-out attack on children. Remember the Pied Piper, which is one of the classic stories of how children were perverted. The Pied Piper of Hamelin, he took down about, 120 kids. Guys, this one is going after 2.5 billion children. That's unprecedented. The process has been iterative. It has been deliberate. Toy Story 1, probably one of the most entertaining, most creative animated films in history. I mean, think back to the 1990s. Toy Story 1 was wholesome. I think it was perceived that way by parents. There might have been some problems. I don't remember that far back, but I will say that it was perceived as an extremely entertaining film. It was probably the most entertaining children's film of the 1990s.
With underlying biblical worldview attached to it, or as the foundation of it. Because on Woody's shoe, on the sole of his shoe, was written the name of Andy. And so he was there to serve the one that was his creator. He was to serve Andy at his pleasure. And Woody gets out of whack when he thinks he's autonomous. And so it's a biblical worldview that is conveyed in that first film. And now we have devolved, we have degenerated, we have come to the point where we're now advocating perversion for children, and we are shoving it down their throats.
Toy Story 4 goes for the hardcore feminist theme. Remember, Toy Story 4 came out, and friends, I'm telling you, Toy Story 4 was the largest box office breakthrough for a G-rated movie in the history of movie productions. And the Toy Story franchise, the largest children's animated franchise in the history of production. Now, once you collect that much power for a franchise, what do you do next? You pervert it, especially if you are principalities and powers that are after perverting and corrupting an entire world and destroying the next generation of South Koreans, Japanese, Africans, South Americans, Americans, Europeans. They're all going to get Toy Story 5, and they will be perverted. They will be corrupted. Let's go take one look at the Plugged In review. I think they did a pretty good job on this review. I want to get back to it in just a moment on the Generations broadcast. Folks, our families, our future families are crying out for shepherding. Shepherds, fathers, husbands, godly leaders. Our churches are crying out for shepherds, elders, pastors, deacons. But where will we find men who rule their households well and shepherd well in the household of God? Men, is there anything more important you will do in your life than to be the shepherd that God has called you to be? Does God have a call in your life to be a father, a shepherd in the home? Does God have a call on your life to be pastors, to invest in the precious body of Christ, the church that has been so despised by the world and so neglected by God's people? Would you invest in something this important? Would you surround yourself with good teaching, prayer, counsel, other shepherds to shepherd you, to be the shepherd God wants you to be? We have sought out the best shepherds and pastors for our Shepherds Training Conference, which takes place each year out here on the Eastern Plains of Colorado. Now, this is not a seminary. Seminary professors can make for good seminary professors, but godly, faithful pastors and fathers will prepare more godly, faithful shepherds and pastors in the home and church. If you feel God's call in your life to spiritual leadership, if you sense this is the time to invest in preparation, encouragement, strengthening, guidance for spiritual leadership in your home or church life, register now for our Shepherds Conference taking place October 24th to 28th this year. It's 5 days of immersive teaching, fellowship, meals together, prayer, small groups, and a life-transforming, family-transforming, church-transforming event. Early registration is only $349 for room, board, and the whole week's program. Register now at generations.org and click on events. Register at generations.org. That's events. And we are back on the Generations broadcast. Kevin Swanson with you. Toy Story 5. Now, full-fledged, full-bore homosexuality on steroids. And friends, this is agenda-driven. This is intentional. This has been planned since 1990. This has got to have the influence of principalities and powers behind it. Disney has been one of the most pro-homosexual organizations since 1990. And so I conclude that there are incredibly powerful principalities and powers behind this force. And don't forget, peer influence will have more power in general than parents who are trying to keep this stuff at bay. But the homosexual thing in the film, Lightyear, that is Toy Story 5, the homosexual thing in this whole narrative was much more pervasive than I had expected it to be. I didn't know anything about this movie until I'd read the stories and brushed up on the Plugged In review. It was not just one isolated scene. It wasn't just, you know, 2 seconds. That's what you saw in Beauty and the Beast 2015. This is a full-fledged indoctrination in homosexuality for six-year-olds. And friends, don't miss it. This isn't exactly for 14-year-olds. This movie, the Toy Story movies, have been something people have been showing their 5- and 6- and 7-year-olds since, what, 1995?
Right.
Now, here's what Plugged In says. After one of Buzz's hyperspeed testing runs, he returns to find Alicia Hawthorne. She's gotten engaged. What's her name, Buzz asks, implying that Alicia's same-sex attraction has never been a secret to Buzz or anyone else. Her name, Alicia, says Kiko. Later, we see the two women kiss to celebrate their 40th anniversary. So that's it.
Okay. Now, wait just a minute, Kevin. Even the language used in this review is a tip of the hat to the culture.
It's bothersome, isn't
okay.
it? It bothers me, too.
Alicia's same-sex attraction?
Right.
No,
right.
Her Alicia's sexual perversion.
Yeah.
Her sexual immorality.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Her rebellion against God's order.
Yeah.
There are many phrases he could have used in this, but he chose to soften it by saying Alicia's same-sex attraction.
And then he throws in the anniversary.
Yes. So what it does is it says this is not a sin, this is merely a lifestyle choice. And that's part of the problem with Christians is we buy into the culture's use of language. Language matters extremely.
He goes on, after one of Buzz's next testing runs, he returns to find Alicia is visibly pregnant. How in the world did Alicia get pregnant? That's not explained. Buzz's last testing trip, as noted, correlates to more than 6 decades in time, passing back to the planet, skipping an entire generation. We then meet Izzy Hawthorne, granddaughter of Alicia, who refers glowingly to her two grandmas. Okay, so again, this is, you know, homosexuality on steroids. And here's the way that the Plugged In reviewer puts it at the end. To my mind, what's most noteworthy isn't really the kiss that we see, but the fact that the film depicts everything around it as completely normal and unremarkable. The couple gets married, has a child, lives decades together, all without ever explaining or suggesting that this is anything other than how things are supposed to be. The worldview is, pardon the pun, light years beyond LeFou's giggling innuendo, hinting at his attraction to Gaston in 2017's Beauty and Beast remake. Instead, it fully embraces a perspective on these issues in direct conflict with what Scripture teaches about the purpose and place of sexuality and marriage between a man and a woman. All right. So that's the way that this thing ends. Bottom line is this is indoctrination, again, for children,
yeah,
for 5- and 6-year-olds. They're normalizing a sexual perversion, but they're also sexualizing children, but not just sexualizing children, but perverting children. Does that make sense?
We talk
about the sexualization of children. Now, technically, you're not supposed to be sexualizing a 6- or 7-year-old in the sense that you're explaining in detail what mommy and daddy do, right? It's just, nobody does that. Nobody should do that. That's just gross. That's borderline abusive. But man, when you not only sexualize children, but you sexually pervert them at 5, 6, 7, 8 years of age, that's just sick.
Yeah. And this is happening in the secular schools daily. It's not just a film. This is a whole tapestry that is being woven in our culture before the eyes of our children to explain sexuality, to explain their identity, to explain their place in the universe, to explain that they are autonomous. And that is the problem. I mean, Plugged In gets it right. It's not a one-and-done scene. Throughout the film, there are hints and there are subtleties that support this lifestyle. So Plugged In has recognized those.
Now, we've been going after Disney for 9 to 10 years. You can go back and find some of our older programs on sermonaudio.com. We have been going after Disney for 10 to 11 years, but, you know, I'm not sure that we've made much progress warning parents that, you know, they really shouldn't be following the Pied Piper of Hamelin. I mean, you really shouldn't sign your kids up to Disney or How to Train Your Dragon or Harry Potter or all these other franchises that have systematically perverted and corrupted children by, in their sequels, adding a approval and encouragement to homosexual sexuality. We've been warning families for a long time. Let me ask you this, Bill. Do you think that that 99.9% of Christian parents now will listen to these warnings, whether it be from PluggedIn.com, and thankfully they've finally stepped in and said, hey, by the way, big problem here. And will they listen to Kevin Swanson? Will they listen to Bill Jack? Will 99.9% of Christian parents with children say, we're not doing Toy Story anymore?
No. No.
You don't think so?
I don't think so. I think the percentage has gone from, you know, single points up to double digits.
So maybe 14% or 19%.
Maybe 50% if you want to be very optimistic. But the vast majority of those who are self-proclaimed evangelicals will overlook the warnings.
I want to give a couple other examples before I'm done. And we've gone after Disney before, but it's not just movies. It also involves literature and children's books. And I want to use the example of Shel Silverstein, who wrote the book The Giving Tree, which, by the way, has sold 10 million copies. All right, it's probably one of the most popular children's books. I'm not talking about an 18-year-old kid's book. I'm talking about a 10-year-old or a 7-year-old book. 10 million copies of Shel Silverstein's book, The Giving Tree, has been out there and accessible to parents since 1960. He couldn't get anybody to publish it in 1960 because it was too dark and depressing. But dark and depressing came to define our modern world. It wasn't long before the world was ready to buy dark and depressing books, even for 6-year-olds. But the message, well, who knows what the message is? Even adults are confused by the message. The point is, just leave the kids with a meaningless, dark, and depressing message that no two adults can agree on. That's basically the worldview behind The Giving Tree. The tree gives everything. The man takes everything. Could be exploitation, environmentalist theme, who knows? Wrong view of love and relationship, one-way giving. The man just takes and takes and takes from the tree. There's no sense of final redemption, and even nature is not redeemed in the story. Now, Shel Silverstein. You know, you're a parent buying children's books in 1975, and you're thinking to yourself, okay, Shel Silverstein, the guy's been hanging out with Hugh Hefner since 1956. He is the guy hanging out with the most outstanding pornographer of American history for like 20 years. Silverstein was known to live intermittently with his new pal at the Playboy Mansion. And he was probably the most profligate. He boasted of hundreds of women, or was it thousands of women? I'm not sure. Anyway, probably the most wicked man of the 20th century, or in the top 10 of the most wicked men of the 20th century. And the writer and producer of children's books. Okay, now, Bill, what's wrong with this picture?
Well, what's wrong with it is that we're not as worldviewish as he was. In other words, he saw his worldview as embracing everything. We see the world, as Francis Schaeffer said, in bits and pieces. We think of church as being a Sunday go-to-meeting event. And our Christian worldview may affect our ethics, but it doesn't really affect much else. Whereas his worldview permeated every aspect of his life.
So he was even more self-consistent.
He was consistent.
Than most Christians.
Yes.
And self-aware of his own worldview.
And very contemplative in how he was going to bring about a change in the culture through to adopt his worldview.
And surreptitious as well, winsome and fun on one level. And then that's what makes Shel Silverstein so attractive, because he was somewhat winsome and fun on one level, but corrupting, amoral, humanist, atheistic on another level. So I guess my question, Bill, is, are people not willing to think about this? Do they not want to dig into this? And, you know, I wonder if this guy who's been hanging out in the Playboy Mansion with Hugh Hefner may have the wrong worldview and somehow convey the wrong worldview to kids through his children's literature. Do people even ask the question?
No, we're trained to emote, not to be contemplative. We're not trained to think through. We're trained to feel. We see that in the film Star Wars. Go with your feelings. Feel the Force. Do not think. Feel.
Both Sidewalk and A Light in the Attic were banned from various libraries at first. The poems, the pictures, too weird, too gross, anti-authoritarian, etc. Some called Silverstein's poems satanic, sexual, cannibalistic as well. So one poem, dreadful, someone ate the baby. What a frightful thing to do, to eat. Someone ate the baby, though she wasn't very sweet. It's just gross. That's just evil. Now, granted, it's a double entendre. Could be read different ways. But even if that be the case, what are you doing? You're opening kids up to relativism or meaninglessness. In other words, you're saying, you can read me either way. It doesn't matter. Now, that itself is a conveyance of a particular worldview, isn't it?
Yep.
Even when you do that, you're conveying a worldview. And we as Christians should be eminently sensitive to the deception and the surreptitious nature of this kind of communication. He dabbles in hope and hopelessness and Nietzschean nihilism, et cetera, but he does it in a comical way, in a less serious way, as if he was just joking. Well, friends, I could give you other examples of this. Dr. Seuss, we've mentioned him before. Seuss developed the nonsense verse, the amphigory, or the whimsical poem. It's a form of light, rhythmical verse depicting peculiar creatures in amusing and fantastical situations, and it resists rational interpretation. Sometimes it's ethically confusing. Cat in the Hat, strange characters, blue hair, creatures sort of going crazy, acting autonomously, anarchically, making a mess out of the house for fun while the kids' parents are away, and then quickly cleaning it all up. Probably not exactly the best lesson for children. Is it all right to misbehave for a while as long as it doesn't really hurt anybody? You can clean everything up and nobody knows what you did. Are we really asking ourselves these questions? Well, friends, I'm going to wrap it up there. I'm just simply saying, as parents, we need to be asking ourselves, what is this? What's the worldview? What's being conveyed in these stories? There's a lot of anti-authoritarianism that shows up. It's a lot of instances in which children are not actually encouraged to obey their mothers and fathers in modern literature. And I think we need to be able to dissect those sorts of things. Are we reducing children's literature to that which is meaningless? Insignificant. There's no meaning, no significance. Everything is trite, meaningless, and silly. Is that the kind of message you want to convey to your kids? Again, just asking the question. Well, that wraps up this edition of the Generations Broadcast. We could say more. I'd encourage you to my book, The Tattooed Jesus, What the Real Jesus Would Do with Popular Culture, as just a way in which you can begin to analyze literature, movies, etc., on various levels, the metaphysical level, the ethical level, the level of method, methodological levels, very important. What's being conveyed in the way, in the mode by which the message is being conveyed? And does the method itself, the mode itself, contradict the message? I realize these are sneaky things, but guys, the devil is sneaky. He's creative. He knows how to deceive. And if we can't, if we're just going to throw ourselves, our families, our kids in the middle of all of this and not be careful and discerning, then man, we should just avoid the whole thing altogether. I guess that's the way I'd wrap this thing up. Get a copy of The Tattooed Jesus, What the Real Jesus Would Do with Pop Culture, my book on popular culture, available at generations.org. This is Kevin Swanson and Bill Jack inviting you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.